Hey, everybody. My name is April Lovett.
And my name is Daryl Lovett.
We've been together for 5 years, and we have a 3-year-old sweet and sassy little girl, an adorable and smiley baby boy, and our fur child, our dog, Lainey.
That's right. We also work our 9-to-5 jobs together, we teach together, and we co-own The Lovett Company.
That's right. We do so much together, and we wanted to share some of our tips and tricks for living out our 24/7 relationship.
Oh, yes. A relationship that is all day, every day.
Plus, we want to share with you how we manage to run our side business alongside full-time jobs and still find time for kids, chores, and fun. So in this podcast, the Success in Black and White podcast, we'll be talking about working towards success, overcoming failures, and just living our everyday lives.
So get ready, get ready, get ready. We're going to be bringing to you real talk concepts every week as we share some of our stories, best practices, as well as talk to guests about how they have found success by doing extraordinary things in their everyday lives.
Friends, how many of you declare goals to lose weight, eat healthier, save money, stay more connected to family and friends, go after that dream career, travel to that one place, or whatever else you want to accomplish, only to find yourself falling off the wagon within a few weeks? The number one thing that people get wrong when they set goals for themselves is not declaring their goal in a way where they plan the action steps to succeed. This episode of Success in Black and White, the podcast, is sponsored by our very own Goal Crusher Guide and Workbook. Daryl and I are excited to bring to you this easy-to-use, comprehensive workbook. Even better, friends, for you, it's completely free. We love y'all, and our goal is to inspire as many people to succeed as we can. We want you to be able to not only go for your dreams, but to actually achieve them. This guide will help you establish goals based on your life values, prioritize your goals, write action steps, and make them visual so you are more likely to achieve them. You can get your free copy of the Goal Crusher Guide and Workbook on our website, successinblackandwhite.com/goalcrushers. Hey, hey, everybody. We are coming to you for this week's episode from our cruise ship.
That's right. Live from the cruise ship.
Yeah. Well, live. Actually, we are doing a Facebook Live session right now.
Yeah. Everything is live.
Yes. So shout out to our Facebook Live watchers. We're excited that you guys are joining us. But we are, coming to you from cruise ship, which is super exciting. We are on a vacation / retreat, which Daryl was not super thrilled about. But
no, we have a full agenda, outline, binder, tabs, pens, highlighters, you name it, we have it. So when you say vacation, it is definitely a 50-50 vacation / business trip.
But at least we got the 50.
Yeah, the 50 is good. I can't,
we're
argue
fun.
About that.
Yeah. We actually have been shirking some of our business responsibilities to have some fun, too.
Yeah, we did that.
We did that a little bit.
Yeah.
That's okay.
No, we did that a lot.
We're still getting work done,
we
though.
We did. Yesterday, we were very productive with our business plan. So I'm very excited about that. And to actually sit down together and to kind of write out some of our goals individually without conversating with each other about them and then putting them together side by side was very productive, because it kind of gave me an insight on what you were thinking, but it also gave me an opportunity to write down kind of what I was thinking and go through my process without trying to figure out what approach you wanted to take. So I really appreciated that. I think that it was very productive, and I'm very excited to actually map that out.
Yeah.
So
me too. I'm excited about it. And then we've just been having fun on the cruise. Like we stepped out yesterday when we were in port at Key West.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Do you want to tell them what we saw?
So, I was introduced to Fantasy Fest.
Yeah.
If you don't know what Fantasy Fest is, I'm going to just tell you to Google it.
don't Google it at work.
Yeah, please. Don't do it at work. Don't Google it at work. And then if you have little people in your house, make sure that they're not around when you Google it. But we saw some of the weirdest things live in the middle of the street. So when I say weirdest, I mean we saw naked people.
Yeah, we did.
Like,
naked
people. Butt cheek naked with paint. And that was it. And not just one, not just two. I mean, multiple. Many.
You know, I gotta say, though, much love, because I don't know that I could actually do that in front of other people.
Not at all.
So I'm good for you if you have that kind of body confidence.
So here's my thing. and then we're gonna get back on topic of our update. So we saw this guy, and I'm upset that I saw it, but I did see it. And he had on a thong.
Yeah, he did.
And that was it, just a thong and then some paint. And he went into this establishment, and he sat down on a bar stool, bare booty. And in my head, I was like, I would be so upset if I was the person that came and sat down on that same stool after him. Because I doubt that they walked around with sani wipes and wiped off the stools. And I was so grossed out and disgusted. And I just wanted to just, like, take a cup of water and walk over to him and just, like, splash it on his booty.
Gross. I didn't even think about it.
What?
But, oh, my gosh, that's disgusting. And yeah. We sat down. We got a drink in the bar with a guy wearing a wolf hat.
He had a wolf hat.
Woman wearing a croc hat.
A croc. I don't know. Yeah, had, like, with antlers on it.
It was very strange. But we sat down with him and had a drink. But what if somebody's beer butt was on that bar or that bar stool?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm sure it was.
I got to throw those shorts away now. Why'd you say that?
You were the one who brought it up.
I like those shorts. Now I have to throw those shorts away. I'm going to let you smell the shorts first, and you tell me if I need to throw them away.
No.
All right, come on, bring it back. Bring it back.
So the other thing that we got to do last night that I've never done before, I think you've seen it. I don't know if you did, but it was a silent
disco. Yeah.
So you walk into the room and they give everybody a pair of headphones and you have three channels that you can go between. So you can choose the music that you want to listen to or the song that you want to listen to, but everybody is dancing together.
Yes.
But when you first walk in, it looks really, really strange because everybody is dancing and having a great time and yelling and laughing.
Yeah.
And it's completely silent. There's no music. There's no nothing. And you're like, what? But then you put the headphones on and you're right there with them. Like, we're on the dance floor. We had a great time
last night. It was fun.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess I'm weird in this way. So I only have one ear on because everyone is singing when their favorite parts of the songs come on. But you can't hear anything except people singing. And, I mean, I'm not a musically inclined person, like, vocally. But I can tell you, it sounds horrible, but it's funny at the same time because everyone is having a great time and they're singing and they don't know how loud they're singing because the headphones are on. So I have one on my ear and the other off so that I can hear everybody sing in an off key. And it is the funniest. Well, I guess I could
I'm
be weird.
I just
it was the funniest thing ever. But then when you look around and you see people doing different dances, you're like, oh, snap, what they listening to? Let me go to the red station. Let me go to the green station. Let me go to the blue station. But no, it was pretty cool. It was so fun just to see a lot of people having a good time and nobody really passing judgment except me listening to people sing.
Yeah, you're so
with
wrong.
With my one ear on and one ear off.
You're so wrong.
I loved it, though. It was fun.
That's fun. Yeah, we had a good time. And then I guess we should probably clarify, too, because, you know, we always give life updates about our kids usually because, like, that's our whole life.
Yeah.
We did not bring them on this cruise.
Oh, yeah. No, they're not here.
Oh, no. They're with Nana and Papa. They're having a great time.
Yes. Shout out to Nana and Papa.
Shout out to Nana and Papa for watching them.
We appreciate you and we love you for this.
Yeah, a
look forward to many more of these.
No, I meant that.
I said it jokingly, but I meant that. And then we got Meemaw and Papa. We got to get them in the rotation too.
Meemaw and Papa are definitely getting in the rotation.
All right.
Yeah. So Nana and Papa are Daryl's parents, and Meemaw and Papa are my parents, and we're just gonna tag all of them. They can all take the kids when they want to.
Yeah. And then we're waiting for Auntie Chantel and Uncle Brian.
Heck yeah.
Yep. Y'all get some too.
All the family.
Everybody
gets
some.
Yeah, we'll take plenty of vacations. So let's jump into our topic today.
Okay.
So we wanted to, we kind of toyed around with what kind of topic we should bring to you from the cruise ship, because like it's a fun atmosphere and stuff, but right. this was on our schedule and we really wanted to talk about how we make hard decisions as a couple. And so we are going to get into a little bit of that. And I think we have a couple of stories that we can really tell that will help us reiterate like how we've made those hard decisions and some of the tactics that we would recommend based on our experience together working as a couple who think very, very differently from each other.
Okay.
So I think the first, I think one of the first,
I was about to say, I'll let you lead.
Yeah, I'll lead. Yeah. We've got two probably major decisions.
Okay.
That I think were pretty hard. And not that, you know, not every decision is super hard that we have to make.
No.
And we've had more hard decisions than just two hard decisions. And in the grand scheme of things, I know we're not talking about life or death situations.
Right.
So we Oof. Know that people have to deal with much bigger decisions than we've had to as a couple so far.
Yes.
And so we just want to acknowledge that. So our advice in this episode may not work for everybody. And we're aware of that. But we wanted to talk about two different things. So the first was when we found out that I was pregnant with our daughter, who's now 3.
Oh, we're going there. Okay. All right. I was looking down. I was like, what's going on here? All right. So
we do show yeah. notes, and this is funny because we have Facebook Live, they can kind of see us, and so they see yeah. that we have show notes, but we do them separately.
Yeah.
And then we kind of surprise each other during the All show. All right.
Let's go. When we found out that we were yes. pregnant.
So when we found out we were pregnant with Anna.
You want me to tell?
You tell your side.
Oh my goodness. So let me tell you what happened. So what happened was I was... At the time, I was staying at my place, and it was a duplex. Mm-hmm. And April came over and, like, came in normal, just like nothing was going on, and it wasn't a big deal. And I was like, oh, hey, what's up? Gave hugs and kisses. Good to see you. And she was just like, hey, so what would you think if? And I was like, wow, that just kind of like came up abruptly. Like we didn't even like have our casual, how was your day? My day was good. Good to see you. So what would you think if I told you that I thought I was pregnant? And I was like, excuse me? She was like, yeah, what would you think if you know, I thought I was pregnant? And I was just like, we're going to do this. Let's do this. And we found out that it was true through, how many pregnancies did you take? 2?
Yeah, I took 2, but then I had to go
yeah,
get blood confirmation.
Yeah, yeah, so she took the 2 pregnancy tests, and then I was like, all right, cool. And then we set the appointment and went to the doctor's office, and they did, like, their blood work and stuff, and they came back, and I was like, yeah, you're definitely pregnant. And
that's what she said.
Yeah, yeah, she was like, no, you're definitely pregnant.
And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, she was like, okay, cool. And I don't know how much you want me to go. Like, I don't want to take away from your...
I'll tell the doctor's office.
Yeah. All right, you want me to go to the doctor's office?
No, so I'll tell my version.
Yeah, you tell
of
your
that.
Version okay. of that, and then we'll go to the doctor's office.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so that night that Daryl's talking about, I remember that night so clearly. So I had not been feeling well for a while. And so I want to start off, too, by saying that Anna is an absolute blessing. And
yes.
From the minute we found out, like, no doubt in our minds, we're like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to keep her. Now, getting
yes.
to the, like, how we do that, you know, is kind of what we're going to talk about in the decision making. But we knew right away, like, we love her and she is a blessing.
Yep.
But it was still unplanned. It was kind of a surprise for us.
Oh, yeah. It was a big surprise.
Yeah. So it made it a harder decision.
Yeah.
So, when that same night I had not been feeling well and I was working at, well, we work out in the same place.
Yep.
And so I remember seeing him, I was working out, I had taken a spin class and I went and he's like, do you feel okay? Like,
yeah.
what's wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know. I just feel so weird. Like, I don't know if I'm getting sick. I don't know what it is. I just feel very strange. And this is a point in my life where I was coaching running in the morning and I was training for a marathon, like a 26 miler in the afternoons. And so I was very, very active. My eating was super clean. I was probably like in the best shape I'd ever been in. And so I just didn't feel right. So I got out of the spin class and I was like, well, I'm going to go home. I'm going to shower and I'll come over to your house for dinner.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right. Okay. So I go and on the way home, I'm like, I feel really weird, and it just kind of hit me, like, maybe I should stop and get a pregnancy test, which is probably, like, looking back now, the point where I should have called Daryl and been like, by the way, I'm going to stop and get a pregnancy test, and here's why, and I didn't do that.
No, I did not get that.
No, he didn't get that phone call. There was no prep. I just was like, no, it's going to be negative anyway, but, like, I'll just take the worry out of my mind. So I took it, and I hopped in the shower, and I got out of the shower, and I was like, I started to, like, do my makeup. And I thought, oh, I should probably check my pregnancy test. Like, that's how little of a concern it was in my mind. It was just like, I'm going to get rid of this worry. And when I checked it, it was positive. And I think, like, my breath stopped. Like, I stopped breathing altogether. And I was like, that is not what I expected to be on that test. So
if she would have told me that she was doing that, I would have been able to been there.
Yeah, he could have been there.
To console and hold her, but she didn't tell me, so.
Well, I didn't really need consolation. I was just kind of like,
I still would have wanted to hold you, though, if you would have been like, hey, we're about to have a baby.
Yeah.
I'd have been like, okay. Like, all right.
So I was like, well, okay, I think I probably went over to your house with like one eye with mascara and one eye without mascara, because I was just like, I don't even know what to do now. So I threw on my clothes, and I actually I put the pregnancy test in a plastic bag and actually took it over there.
She brought it over there. I did see it.
And I was like, hey, so what if I was pregnant?
That's exactly, yeah.
So we kind of went through the whole, Daryl explained that night, and I made a doctor's appointment. They did a blood test, and then they confirmed it. And I was like, oh my gosh, well, what do we do? We have to figure out first what we're going to do with this. And then we need to, you know, tell our families, and we need to figure out what are we going to do. And so we kind of went through that process that week. But I'll let you tell them about the actual doctor's appointment that we went to.
Okay.
To kind of figure out more about the pregnancy.
All right. And then I'll let you fill in whatever voids I leave. So... excuse me, this is emotional because we just found out we were pregnant, went to the doctor, and then emotional. Not only this is the emotional part right here, not only did we find out we were pregnant, we found out we were 20 weeks. It was 20 weeks, right? 20 weeks pregnant. You're good. Not only did we find out, like, hey, you're pregnant, it's like you're like well pregnant, and we're way in here,
halfway through.
Yeah, we're halfway through. So for me, when I say it's emotional even right now, is because we didn't have much time to plan anything, yet alone worry about us and how we were going to deal with it. It was like, hey, you're pregnant, you're 20 weeks pregnant. And then this is the part that really tripped me out, and I got a little upset about it, because I don't know, people like to do the reveal.
Yeah,
they like to throw the balloons, and it's either
gender reveal,
blue or pink.
Blue or pink.
So the doctor said, "Hey, would you like to know what sex she is?" And I was like, "Excuse me?" And she was like, "Oh, yeah, would you like to know what sex the baby is?" I was like, "Well,
you
just kind of said what's," because they were able to tell at 20 weeks. And I was just like, "Well, if we didn't want to know, we know now. Thank you so much." And
he was mad about that.
Yeah. I let her know. I was like, "We might have wanted to cut the cake."
Yeah.
You know, see what color the cake on the inside was. If it was blue or if it was pink. She spoiled that right there in the moment. Yeah. So we found out in one doctor's visit that, yes, we were pregnant. Mm-hmm. Not only that, we were 20
halfway there.
Weeks pregnant.
Yep.
Not only that, it was a girl.
Yep.
We found that all out in, what, like 15 minutes?
Yeah, within a span of 10 or 15
minutes. 10 or 15 minutes,
And I think we were both just kind of speechless.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't
really
think we even really talked.
I didn't know whether, I didn't know whether to cry, whether to smile, whether to hug you. I just sat there and I was just kind of like, wow, that was a lot. Like, yes, you are pregnant. The pregnancy test was confirmed. That's true. Not only that, you're over halfway. So if you haven't started to prepare, you definitely need to, because you're running out of time and you're having a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh.
And women are going to think that I am crazy. So the women listening to this podcast are going to be like,
oh, how did you not know?
Yeah, how did you not know? So there are a whole bunch of multiple factors, and some of them, you know, personal, that I won't get super deep into. But I think the number one thing is that because I was doing so much training, and I was in probably the best shape of my life at that time, everything
felt weird.
Yeah, like my body was functioning very differently. And if any women have ever trained for a marathon or done very heavy training like that, your body will stop functioning in womanly ways, I guess you could say.
Yep.
And so mine had done that, and it hadn't been, it had been longer than that 20 weeks. And so I was kind of used to that because it had been months that going on that had been kind of like that for me. So, and the fact that I wasn't, I really wasn't showing, maybe just a little bit.
Yeah.
And where I had like, I was like,
we have pictures, man. And we look back at those pictures and we're like, oh,
can you tell?
Yeah.
It was crazy. So I wasn't even showing with Anna. It was insane. And then it was probably like 2 weeks later and it was like, bam.
Yeah. It popped out.
There she was.
Yeah. So
it was crazy the way that happened. Some of those big decisions that we had to get into and we had to really talk about with each other in a status of we were not married.
Right.
We were not even living together.
Correct.
You know, we were both getting older, and so a lot of our conversations were heading that direction.
Right.
But we just weren't there yet, and we were okay with that at that time, but we had to really move things along really quickly. And I remember sitting that first doctor's visit. We were sitting in the waiting room because I think we had gone and done the ultrasound. And then we went back to the waiting room to wait for the doctor.
Yeah.
And Daryl looked at me and said, well, you want to move in with me?
That's exactly what
I said. And I was like, well, I think I'm going to have to.
Yeah. And the reason why I did that, and it... So... Those who know me, I'm very process oriented. Uh-huh. And when we found out and we were in the doctor's office, I immediately went into safety mode. I'm a very protective person of people that I care a lot about, people that I love, and family. And I immediately went into like protective mode. I was like, okay, she has to be with me because I want to make sure that we are finishing out the rest of this term. And we're doing what we need to, and she feels comfortable, she feels safe, and everything works out. I immediately went into that mode, and I thought about it, and to her, it might have seemed like it was, like, quick and, you know, thoughtless, but it doesn't take me long, especially when it's something like that. And I immediately knew, like, okay, I'm going to be here for her, and I'm going to make sure that she's safe, our daughter is safe, they're as comfortable as can be, and that I did everything that I could to make sure that, you know, they were both well. So that's why I said that. And it just made me feel comfortable knowing that she was in close proximity. And if she needed something or if anything happened, I wouldn't have to get up and drive across town to go check on her. So that's kind of how I thought through that process and made that quick, rash decision to be like, hey, like, come on.
Yeah, y'all, that's the fastest I've ever seen that man make any decision in my life. It took me off guard. I mean, I was like, well, yeah, I mean, that makes complete sense. And it did make me feel safe and secure for him to say that and to offer that up and to do that and to start planning that portion of our lives. But I have not. This man is so process oriented. Yeah. It takes him, oh my gosh, and we'll talk about this in the in our next scenario, but it takes him a long time to think through all the options. He's got to make sure that everything is right. He's got to make sure everything is perfect. And that's good. That's not how I am. So that's good that I've got him to balance me out. Because me, I'm like, let's do it.
Yep.
Let's go. So I was just surprised. I was taken aback. I almost didn't know what to say because I was like, did you really think this through?
Oh, yeah. I thought it through thoroughly, but it was very instinctual because of the type of person that I am. So,
And yeah. we kept having to make decisions that all maybe seem small decisions, but they really added up into this big decision about this person that we were bringing into our family. And so, you know, we had to then decide, okay, when do we tell our families and how do we tell them? And then we had to decide, you know, what are we going to do about daycares now that we're past all this part?
Yeah.
Who are we going to go with as a primary doctor? You know, all of those things. And so those small decisions really added up into this much larger decision. And we had to learn how to make those decisions together. And I would say for us, that was probably our very first big, big decision that we had to learn how to do that together with very opposite tendencies and personalities.
And on the fly.
And on the fly.
20 weeks in, y'all, I'm telling you, it's Yeah.
Yeah, on the fly. So the next, our second big example, just the two that we thought of. So the second one is when we bought a house.
I'll let you start and kind of
okay,
tell.
You can fill in. So yeah,
I get real salty about this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, well, it's so do I.
Yeah.
It was a process for us. So
we're not saying no names now.
Okay, no names.
Yeah,
names. Yeah, because there are some people we're a little salty towards.
Yeah, so we won't say names.
If you're our family, you know exactly who we're talking about.
No names, but we will. Yeah. All right.
And I don't think the people who were helping us told us multiple times as we went through the process of buying a house, and we'll tell you why this was such a process for us in a second, but they told us that everybody we met said, we've never had anybody go through what you guys are going through to buy a house ever. And our realtor specifically said, she's been in the business for 25 years. And she said, I've never seen anybody have to go through what you guys went through to buy this house.
Yeah. True story.
So a little bit of backstory. So ever since we had Anna, and then, you know, we got engaged and then we got married, but kind of in that time process, we always knew that we wanted to buy a house and we needed it to be where we both had stable jobs. And so we were looking in our city, in our state that we live in. And so within our city that we live in, the housing market is rough. It's very rough. You are
true story.
Yeah. You are either looking for a house that is ran down and needs fixed up, in a good school zone and it costs you an arm and a leg, or you're looking at a house that you can afford, that is decent, maybe a newer build, that is in a terrible school zone.
We won't say terrible.
Maybe not terrible.
Not the best?
Not the best.
Okay. Terrible, yeah. That's a strong word.
Yeah, terrible is a strong word.
Yeah.
We'll say not the best school zone.
Yeah.
Well,
based on our perception.
Based on our perception. Good. Thank you for all the clarifiers.
Disclaimer.
Disclaimer, yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, that's kind of reality, and I think it probably happens that way in a lot of different cities, but because ours is smaller, it's hard to figure out where you actually can go, and you want your kids to get a decent education.
Right.
And so that's a huge factor in that decision-making process. So we spent, honestly, a year and a half looking for a house. We were about ready to give up and throw in the towel and say, you know what, we're going to have to find somewhere else to live. Like, we can't find a house here. We don't know what to do.
Yes.
And we were kind of to that point. We had signed on with a realtor, and we had looked for months even with her, and it got to the point where I was like, I don't want to look for houses anymore. I'm sick of this process. At that point, I was pregnant with Vaughn because it was after we'd gotten married. I was pregnant with our son, and I was miserable. He made me miserable. With Anna, I didn't even know that I was pregnant. And with Vaughn, I was miserable the entire time.
Oh, yeah, we knew.
Yeah, we knew right away. But I was so miserable, and so I didn't want to go looking at houses anymore. I was just done with the process. And so I told them that. And so it was probably a week later, and our realtor called us on a Wednesday at 5:15.
It was Wednesday. I was getting ready to leave.
Yeah. It was like 5 or 5:15 because we were on our way out the door of where we work. And she called us and she said, hey, I have this house on the market. And I looked at Daryl. I'm like, I don't want to go.
She did. She said she didn't want to go.
I don't want to go. And she said, well, I just want you to see it. Just keep an open mind. And I was like, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. And he's
anytime
like,
anytime a realtor says keep an open mind,
yeah,
it's like, oh gosh, like, oh boy, what are we about to go get ourselves into today?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Daryl says, let's just go look at it. And I'm like, fine. Like, I'm not happy about this. So we go and we look at the house. And mind you, this is probably the 56th house that we've seen in like
so
3 months.
Many. I was over it.
Yeah. We went and looked at it, and it was perfect. It was perfect.
For our family.
Yeah, for our family. We walked in, and I was like, this is it. This is the house. And even when we walked in, the previous owner had somebody in there actually, like, still painting.
Yeah,
and they
doing
were doing
work.
A lot of, like, just random little tiny renovations and, like, fixing stuff up, even that night. So we walked back out, and our realtor's like, you better put an offer in, because that house is going to go.
Yep.
And we knew that, too. We knew for the price range and where we were looking, and, you know, we knew the house was going to go. So we talked about it, and this is where we differ in our decision making, because I'm like, she's right. We've looked at 56, 57 houses in 3 months. This is the house. We know we're not going to get a better deal. And so we want to make sure that we get this. So let's put the offer in. And Daryl's like, let's sit on it and wait. And I'm like, we can't wait. We can't wait on this. We can't wait. Like, there's no way. So I'm like slowly starting to become a little bit frantic, because I'm like, we got to put the offer in, or we're going to lose out on this. And he was like, let's just sleep on it. We'll put it in the morning.
Yeah. I needed some time to think about it.
Yeah.
I did. I needed some time to think about it. And I was like, we're talking, this was...
That's a major like purchase.
Yeah. And then it was 8. By this time, it was like 8:30 at night.
It was late.
So I was like, all right, I feel like we can like still like maybe like 12 hours and like figure this out. I had to think about this thing. And she was like, let's do it right now. And I was like,
I know. So that's one of the major differences too, because he needs to process and really think about it. And I'm like, let's just do it. Let's just put it in.
Yeah.
So I conceded, and we waited till the morning, thought about it, woke up, and the first thing I said before I even got out of bed, I was like, put the offer in.
She said, what do you want to do? She said, what do you want to do? I really think we need to put this offer in. So it was kind of like, hey, I'm taking into consideration that you have to think about it, and I'm asking you, what do you want to do? But really, we need to put this offer in. I will never forget that morning. I mean, literally, like, we sat up, and I'm doing my, you know, my yawn and stretch, and then she's like, hey, so what do you think about it? We need to put this offer in. And I was like, well, good morning to you, too. Like, you know, just kind of rubbing my eyes and waking up. But, I mean, we took those next few minutes, and we were like, all right, cool, let's do this. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
And...
So I wish we could say that's where the story stopped.
No.
But it's not. We waited the entire next day, and we knew. So the guy actually accepted our offer.
Right.
And we had waited all day for it. And we were actually surprised because of the house. It was nice. The market, it wasn't. Like, it was just, it was, we were surprised that he accepted the offer.
Correct.
And so on Friday, I went in to put in the deposit. And our realtor said, you guys got really lucky. She said, I just found out that I actually showed you the house the night before I was supposed to go on the market and before I was supposed to.
Right.
And I was like, oh my gosh. She said, 21 different appointments lined up to see scheduled that house today.
When it was supposed to
go online to be looked at. And I was like, oh my gosh. I called Daryl. I said, this is a blessing that he accepted the offer on our house. And so we kind of went through that process. We went into contingency period, and that's the first 15 days. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, we just went through this. We just bought the house, and I don't even remember what exactly that entails.
Yeah.
But it's the first 15 days, and there's a contingency period so that the seller, well, I think it's to protect the buyer.
Right.
And so the buyer can get out if there's anything that's crazy.
That's correct.
Well, there were some things that came up that were crazy. So the biggest thing out of everything was that there ended up being a lien.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
That lien was for like 14 or 15 grand.
Yeah.
And the problem is that lien is on the seller. And if the seller chooses not to pay it, the buyer, well, we don't have, I mean, we could have offered to pay it, but we don't have 15 grand lying around. Like, mm-mm, we're trying to give you a down payment, you know, for the house. So where do we give and take? And so we were like, oh my gosh, are we going to lose this house? And our realtor said, yeah, you could definitely lose the house. So we were kind of sitting there like, well, what do we do? So we went into almost survival mode. I'm calling like the city and everybody like, hey, I need to find out more about this lien, because I wanted to know, could we potentially lose out on this house?
Yeah. And while she was doing that, I went into like my process mode. I was like, all right, let me find our additional options. If this doesn't work out, where can we go and where can we rent until we, you know, find something else? And I already had places lined up. I had numbers to call. I had places ready to go and check out. So she was like calling the city and stuff. And I was like, no, if this falls through, my family needs somewhere to go, because we had already told our landlord, mm-hmm, you know, that we were going to be out. And we were on a month-to-month rent basis with him. And he was very gracious to to let us do that, but we had to be out when we told him. Yeah. So we gave him that notice, and he was like, okay. He was already starting to plan for us to be out.
Yeah, he was looking for other runners.
Yeah, so I immediately went into my process mode to where I was like, mm-hmm. well, my family, we have to go somewhere because, you know, we not sleeping in the cars and doing mm-hmm. all that stuff. So that's what I did. And she was calling the city and yeah. I'm calling other places to rent houses.
We did that a little differently.
But yeah.
Yeah. But that eventually did resolve itself. And that
yeah, it worked
he
itself out.
Went in and he pleaded with the city that yes. he got it reduced to a fine that he could pay off.
Right.
And he did pay that off. And, you know, God bless that because that,
yeah, that
sale
would have fell through. Definitely favor.
Yeah, that was favor for us.
Yeah, for us. Yeah. That was definitely favor.
Yes, absolutely. We say this house is a blessing from beginning to end. You know, and then we had to kind of deal with, well, if the house does not appraise at the offer that you made, because right. we made a little bit higher of an offer just so they would accept it.
Correct.
And then they came back and said, well, if the house doesn't appraise, then your loan won't go through. Because
right.
we had a first-time home buyer's loan.
Yep.
And they said, your loan won't go through, and so you're going to lose the house. And we were like, oh, my gosh. So we're sitting on that for, you know, three or four more days. And I remember, like, we were both talking to our families, and I would call my parents, and I'm like, I can't believe this. Like, this is so crazy. Have you guys ever ran into this? No. Like, nobody's heard of this yet. So we get through the lien. We get through that. It turns out it appraises okay.
It does.
And we were somewhere else when we found out that it appraised okay. I think we might have been seeing your family or something.
Yeah, we were traveling.
We were traveling somewhere, and we found out that it appraised. And so we were like, God bless. Nothing else can happen to us with this house.
Right, right.
So we kind of get into it. We start signing, you know, the contracts so it can go into underwriting.
Underwriting, yep. That was the next step.
Yeah, and so we made the offer in November. We signed that in December-ish.
Yeah.
And it got to be the week before Christmas.
Right before Christmas.
Literally
yep.
the week before Christmas.
Yep.
And that was when they were going to look at underwriting.
December 15th, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, maybe it was like a week and a half before.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was the 15th.
So that was when they were going to go into underwriting
right.
so that they could get it done before the holidays because
correct.
They shut down everything during the holidays.
That's
so
right.
we were up against a time frame too of holidays, and if the bank didn't go into underwriting before that, then we could also lose the house.
Yeah, we could lose it. Yep,
so
on the back end.
We were in this week prior to the holidays, to Christmas, and I'm trying to remember exactly how we found this out.
Oh, you know me. I'm checking them banking accounts.
Yeah, you know, so maybe you should tell this part of the
yeah,
story.
No, yeah, definitely. I'll jump in. So, once again, for people who don't know me, I'm very process oriented. I like to make sure all of my things are in order and in line. So I check our bank accounts. So I was checking the bank accounts and I looked and I said, this doesn't look right. Why is there a zero? Or actually, no, it wasn't a zero. It was like $7.13. And we were in the process of going into underwriting. And I was like, no, they're supposed to be like thousands and thousands of dollars in here because that's our down payment and they needed to see this for underwriting. So I, you know, made a couple of phone calls and I was like, hey, it's like something's not right. Maybe your system's down or maybe something's not showing up right on my end. And the bank, they confirmed, it's like, nope, you have $7.13 in your account. And I was like, hey, what are you doing? We got to go to the bank. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually went to the bank, and who we bank with, they were great. They work with us, and they looked at all of the information, and they kind of told me and showed me where mm-hmm. the money came out at and how much came out.
And tell them what happened.
Yeah. So somebody actually stole all of our money.
Literally.
They literally stole all of our money. They left us $7.13 into our account because it couldn't come out in the increments of, I think it was like 10, 20.
Yeah.
Or whatever the increments were. And they couldn't take it. So they left us $7.13.
Yep.
And the bank told us, oh, no, like you withdrew like thousands of dollars
in Fort Lauderdale.
In Fort Lauderdale. Yeah.
At an ATM.
At an ATM.
And we're like, but we live hundreds of miles away.
Yeah. And I'm like, so obviously we didn't approve of this or authorize this. So what can we do? And the bank, like they went upstairs and got like the general manager of the bank, and then they got the fraud person, and they all came down with paperwork and filed. And I tell you, when we walked out of that bank that same day that we went in, they had reimbursed us all of our money because we told them the situation that we were going through.
They gave it all
with
back.
Underwriting.
And also, I was pregnant and crying because I was upset about it.
Oh, yeah. And
that might have helped.
She was pregnant. She was crying and I was fired up. But I didn't want that to come across to the people that were helping us as I was mad at them or it was their fault. But I was fired up. And if anybody has ever seen me, like, actually really get fired up. Some people think they've seen me fired up, but it's not really fired up. It's just that I have a big presence and my voice sometimes can get very loud. But no, I was really fired up. And I just wanted to make sure that they understood that I was, you know, a little upset. But at the same time, I was trying to do everything on my end to make sure that I was assisting them in resolving it. Before we left that bank, they had given us all of our money back and they wrote a letter for the underwriting and they sent it to them. And then they wished us well with the purchasing of our house, even though we weren't even financing through them. What? If you can't tell me that that bank was off the chain. Not only the bank, that's favor again.
That is favor.
We want to talk about favor. We want to talk about a blessing.
Yes.
Because the lady who came down, who was the fraud person, she said that this usually takes, 48 hours?
Yeah. We're like, we don't have 48 hours. We don't have 48 hours. The underwriters are looking at our accounts today.
Yeah.
And we have to have the money in there.
Yes. And she said, okay, let me see what I can do. And she took them 48 hours, and with the favor that we had from the big man above and her doing her work, she took that thing, and within, how long did it take
her?
5 minutes. She went upstairs, and in 5 minutes, she came back downstairs and said, hey, can you sign this for me real quick? And I was like, I don't know what it is, but if I'm getting my money, I'm signing it.
Yep.
And I tell you, she brought us the statement back, and every single penny that was in there before, they had reimbursed us. And then they told us how to proceed with the legal portions of it and contacting the fraud department and all of that. So
they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the situation with the house. But through that entire situation, we had to make all of these decisions. And it was not easy. I remember when we found out the lien was on that house.
Yeah.
We ended up, it was probably in the car, and we were trying to figure out what we could do, who we could call. I think we're having that discussion in the car. I was close to tears. I was close to tears the entire house hunting experience because I was pregnant the entire time. And then all this stuff on top of it.
She's trying to blame it on the pregnancy.
I probably would have been crying anyway.
Girl,
yeah.
Please.
My emotions were just kind of at the surface at that time.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a hard time. And so we had to make a lot of decisions. I mean, the number one was like, okay, our contingency period is up and this lien may not get paid.
So do
and
you want to
we're
just,
taking a gamble.
Yeah. Do you want to just call it or do you want to continue to invest in the inspection and all of those different things? So we talked about that. That was probably one of the most challenging decisions for me because she was like bought in and she was like, yeah, let's do this. And me, process oriented, I'm like, hey, we had to put this down payment. We already passed the contingency period. We're going to lose that. We could risk losing a couple of thousand more dollars. Like, do we let it go? Is it going to be feasible for our family?
Right.
You know, what's next? And I had to think through that and get my options in line and what I thought the best move for our family would be. And she wanted to go for it.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I trust in her, and like she wants this house and she loves this house the way that she does. And I had to like waver, and I was like, oh my God, it was hard. I held my heart the whole time, and I was like, oh my gosh, all right, let's do it, let's keep rolling.
I think this is one of, I think any couple could probably say this. This is probably one of the biggest differences too between men and women is that women usually make very emotionally based or charged decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And men tend to process a little bit more. That's always been the case with us. And we just think very differently. But I've noticed it definitely in talking to like friends and family too, that the women are usually the more emotional decision makers.
So with that being said, I love that about her because sometimes that challenges my faith.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of times I say, you know, I have faith and I believe, And sometimes when it's time for me to make the decision, I go so deep into my process that it overrides my faith. And sometimes when she says, let's jump, and we've done what we need to do as far as, you know, getting our thoughts together and getting our plan together, and she's like, let's jump, and I'm still like, I don't know. I'm like, wait a minute. We did everything that we said we were going to do together as a couple, as a family, and I'm still not believing, and I still don't have that faith. So I appreciate that, actually. Well, most of the time I appreciate that. There are some times where I'm like, all right, we didn't do our due diligence, and this ain't this don't got nothing to do with faith. This is just straight up a horrible decision.
Yep.
But you feel in a certain type of way, and you want to do it.
Yeah.
But about that, though, about the house and moving forward, I was like, we prayed about it, and we talked about it, and everything that we needed to do as far as planning together as a family, we did that. And in that moment, I went against everything that we did, and I went against my faith in our decision. And I was like, save a couple of thousand dollars, or have faith in the process and have faith in our decision and have faith in who we pray to and let's go with it. And in that moment, like I said, I did it clutching my heart, but I was like, all right, let's go. I didn't say it like that. All right, let's go. I was like, okay.
It was more like that.
Yeah, no, it really was.
So we kind of told you guys about these two, you know, big decisions. And obviously we have a whole bunch of even little decisions that can sometimes just feel like they're really big decisions when they're really not.
Yes.
And I think that's due to just the fact that we do have very different communication styles and very different personalities and very different strengths. And I think all that can play into it. So have there ever been times of like miscommunication for you that you can think of, or misunderstandings that we've had surrounding, it can be big decisions, it could be little decisions.
So can I take a different approach with that question?
All
right. Look, I did know that question was coming. I'm not going to act like I didn't know. It's right here. It's one of my little bullets. And I know, like, the people who are watching live right now can probably, like, see your face. Like, you're smiling at me, but I can see that squint, like, out the side of your eye. And she's probably like, oh, boy, where is he going with this one? Because I said, can I go a different direction?
I'm just
going
to take a sip of my water.
I promise you it's going to come back full circle. So yes, we do have miscommunications, and yes, we do have misunderstandings. Not all the time, but we do have those. And sometimes they're around big decisions, and sometimes they're around small decisions. I'm just going to tell the people, like, what really gets me going when it's time to make those decisions. So my wife, she trusts me, and she believes in my ability to do what I need to do as far as my thought process when making decisions. And sometimes I ask her things, and I'm like, all right, like, give it to me. What's your input? What's your feedback? We're going to make this decision. I need something from you. And this is the part that gets me. She's like, oh, baby, no. Like, I told you everything that I needed to. We got this. You're good. Go ahead. So I'm like, all right, perfect. Let's do this, whatever the decision is. And I tell you, like, 5 minutes later, she comes back to me with this, like, 30 bulleted list of all the suggestions and recommendations that I had just asked her for prior to making the decision or confirming, like, this is what we're going to do. So when you talk about miscommunication, misunderstanding, that's what comes to my mind. I'm just like, hey, give me the feedback. Let me know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
Tell me everything so that I can give you my part and we can confirm on our decision. And she's like, oh, yes, no, I've told you everything. I'm all good. Let's go. And I'm like, all right, ready, set, go. But wait a minute. Here comes the 30 bulleted list. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I just asked you for that. And you want to talk about misunderstanding and miscommunication? That's usually when it comes up from me. And I do know that. And I don't know how aware of that she was, but hopefully I was talking to her just now when I was making that statement. But it pulled a heartstring when you asked that question about that's where most of the miscommunication and misunderstanding for me comes from.
I agree. I do that. I agree.
But as far as us talking about, you know, the tough decisions and options and things like that, I feel like we talk about it and talk through it so much because I make you, because I'm process oriented, and I will ask you 20 questions that it kind of takes that and minimize the opportunity for those miscommunications.
I agree.
And those misunderstandings, because I am process oriented and you know that.
I agree.
I know that. And my approach is by asking you all of those questions. And sometimes she hates it. Sometimes I'm like, oh, say, okay, so what about this? Well, if we do this, we have to make sure that this is accounted for. And sometimes she looks at me and she's just like, oh my gosh, like, why do we need 12 options? Just give me two and we'll pick the best one, you know. But I think it minimizes it. And this is just from my perspective. You know, my perspective, that it minimizes those miscommunications and misunderstandings because of the way that I think and the way that I process. So that's how I'm going to answer that question.
Yeah.
I hope it came back full circle. Did I even answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I think that's good. I mean, because you're right, because I do that. And that makes total sense, I think. I would think that a lot of women would agree with me that they do that. They're indecisive to a degree because they don't want to make a major decision for their family. I want to lean on you because I trust in you and your process to make a major decision. But then I come back and in my brain, I'm like, oh, here are all the details. Now that you've made this decision for us, here are all my details and here's how I can maybe contribute to it. So I think that's probably where that comes from, but it probably drives you crazy. Sorry.
I love you, baby.
I know.
No, it does drive me crazy.
I know.
Like, no, not a little bit, like a lot.
Okay. Yeah. So that's something I'll work on. See, it's almost like we're having therapy, like group therapy too, because we're on Facebook Live.
Yeah. I told y'all I'm not changing anything. That is, but yeah.
Well, so I think then from my perspective, maybe not a miscommunication, but a misunderstanding. And this is something I've had to train my brain over the years, because like I said, and I hate going back to the stereotypical women and men, but this is very much like that. So women tend to be emotional based decision makers. But at the same time, I'm saying I lean on my husband because I trust him and I trust his judgment. Well, when he goes through the process that he has to go through in order to make the decision that he needs to make that's best for our family, as he's processing, he's compartmentalizing, because men do that, and he's thinking through options and he's throwing things at me that maybe I'm like, okay, I told you to take the reins on this. But are you seeing this from my perspective, from an emotional perspective? And he's not thinking from an emotional perspective. And so sometimes that can, I don't want to say hurt my feelings, but I may take it personally that I'm like, oh my gosh, well, he's not taking this part of what I feel into you know, his decision making, but that's not on him to do. And so I think I've had to really be careful about how my emotions can affect how I feel about the decision that I have told him I trust him to make. And just not to take things personally if I feel like he's like, well, I made this decision and it's not necessarily the one that I would have chosen, but I told him I trust you to do it, then I can't come back and be hurt about that or defensive about that. And I think often that can happen with couples because they don't recognize that in themselves to fix first and then communicate that with their partner.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's miscommunications and understandings that I think at least when we talk about, especially major decisions, but even minor decisions, like where are we going
to
eat tonight?
Everyone wants to make the simple decisions.
Yeah.
No one wants to make the tough decisions.
No.
That's why whenever there's a simple decision to be made, everybody's willing to jump on.
Yep.
You know, when you're talking about, as an example, ice cream, you know, like ice cream itself is good, so it doesn't matter what you bring me, just bring me some ice cream. You know, I feel like that's one of those like simple decisions. Yeah. And if you ask someone, like, would you prefer to make the tough decision or the simple decision, I don't think there's going to be too many people, I could be wrong if you like to challenge yourself, that are going to say, oh no, I don't want to make that simple decision. Give me the tough one. Like, you know, realistically, I don't think many people are signing up for that.
Right. I agree.
So, well, since we're talking about, decision making, you want to like do our tips and strategies?
Yeah, because we write show notes beforehand and we write them individually so we can have a authentic as possible conversation with you.
Right.
And with each other. But today, because of the topic, we did sit down and come up with four different pieces of advice that we would have or that we would even use ourselves when you talk about making hard decisions as a couple. So the first one, you want to go into the first
one? Yeah, I'll do the first. Okay. So basically, I'll let you know this. It was a decision for us to sit down and tell you which tips and strategies we wanted to talk about together. Because our list and our tips and strategies were like this long. Uh-huh. You can't see me, but I'm doing it with my hand. But like this long. Because she had hers and I added mine. And then we sat together and combined them to see the similarities and the differences. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to leave her tips or my tips and strategies out. So what we did was found the commonality. Mm-hmm. And that's how we came up with these four. Mm-hmm. So the first one is that we have, let me get my notes. This is the first time I think that I actually get to use notes that we wrote down. Is to communicate. Yeah. And when we use that term, and a lot of people use that term, but I want to go a little bit deeper. And when we're talking about communicating and how we discussed it, it's making sure that we are fully connected and we're fully engaged when we're communicating about the decisions. Mm-hmm. We're not just sitting down having the surface level talk about making a decision. We're connected on a thought level, on a decision-making level, on an impact level, and we're engaged with each other. And we're taking the approach from communicating, but not only from that communicative approach, but from a connection approach and being connected in the words that we're using, what we're saying, the tone, and how we're talking to each other. And we're not, you know, getting fired up and yelling and because when you're talking about making tough decisions, sometimes emotions get involved. Sometimes the way that you communicate could dictate the outcome of the decision, and it could either harm or benefit you depending on which way it goes. So when you're communicating, making sure that you're fully connected is very important. So you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I would say the element of self-awareness and then an awareness of your partner. Self-awareness in that I know what my triggers are. I know that if I feel like, you know, he's talking about something that maybe would not benefit us in the way that I think it would, I can jump. And I know that because that's in my personality. I can jump to a conclusion and say like, well, maybe you're not taking all of this into consideration, or you're not thinking about me, or you're not thinking about the kids. And I can do that just bam, in a snap, without stopping to think about, he probably has taken all that into consideration. I haven't heard him out yet. And so I have to be very self-aware in how my reactions and how my emotions are before I come into the conversation with him. And so I take that check back, because even now, even with practice, there are times that he may say something and my emotion might, bam, right to the surface. And so for me, I make sure now, step back, take a step back, take a deep breath, and remember that whatever he's telling you is because he thought it through. Like, I know this man. I know he wants what's best for our family, and I trust him for that. And so he's not telling you something to hurt you. He's doing it because this is the best decision from his point of view. And he'll hear you out, because I know he will. But then the other thing that I think you have to be aware of is how your partner responds and reacts. So say, and this may be a better almost conversation topic for like if we were get into an argument, how do we do that? But understanding for me that he doesn't respond the same way I do. I get emotional, and in the past, I've wanted to hash out that conversation right then. I want to resolve it right now. I want to make sure we get it resolved. I want to do it right now to satisfy my need to do it right now. And I've had to learn over the years that he does not do that, and he cannot have that conversation. It will not be a productive conversation if there is something that I disagree with or something that is upsetting me. And I'm like, hey, this is upsetting me. I know that I need to give him time to process what I said and to think about how he wants to respond to that prompt for me. And so I would add that is that you really need to know yourself and know your partner and understand your communication styles together.
Right. So just to also add on to that, one thing that I definitely had to learn, because she did make that adjustment for me, that when I take my time to process, I make sure I confirm with her that I'm not walking away from her or I'm not walking away from the problem. Mm-hmm. That, hey, give me a couple of seconds. Let me get my thoughts together so that I can communicate them with you in a way that's going to be effective, mm-hmm. and have a resolution. And I make sure I let her know that I'm not running from the problem. I'm not running away mm-hmm. from you because I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk about it. But I just need a couple of minutes to get it together. So yeah, that's something that I had to learn to do as well, because she would be talking and she'd be like, well, tell me this. And I would take my deep breath and then I would literally just check out. And then for her, she'd start crying and then be like, why don't you talk to me about this? What happened? How did we get to this point?
Yep.
And
that's exactly
it took me, you know, a couple of those to realize that, well, maybe I had to meet her and let her know that I'm not checking out on you.
Yeah.
I just need time so that in this space, we can be effective in what we're trying to say to each other, mm-hmm. and that we were doing it appropriately and that there was a resolution. And that was the main thing. And that's all that she wanted. And mm-hmm. I understood that. And I wanted to make sure that I confirmed to her that we were going to get there and that I wasn't checking out on her. So that was an adjustment that I had to make as well. And I think that it's been working really well. And she responds to that when I confirm to her that I'm not walking out on you or the conversation. I'm just taking a few minutes mm-hmm. so that I can make sure that we can actually have a conversation that's going to be productive mm-hmm. and have a resolution. So
absolutely. And then I think the second is really to trust each other's capability to bring their piece of the decision-making process to the table. I know, and we've talked about this a lot already in the episode, so I know that I make emotional-based decisions, and sometimes that's good for us, and sometimes it's bad for us. I know that Daryl makes much slower process-oriented decisions, and a lot of times that's really good for us, and sometimes it holds us back. Yeah. And I think that I have to be aware of how he does that, and he has to be aware of how I do that, and then we have to know when those two processes need to fit together and need to come together. And so I think just being self-aware of, you know, again, going back to self-awareness, being aware of what your style is, of how you make decisions, and then your partner's style of making decisions, and then really working with those two styles to make sure you're making the most effective and best decision for your family.
I agree. I really don't have anything to add to that, because I think you hit it right on the head, making sure that you understand each other. Mm-hmm. And I think what you said is perfect, and I don't want to take away anything from that. Yeah. So I think the next one is knowing when to bend. Mm-hmm. And when I say that is, people say it all the time, like knowing when to pick the battle that you want to fight. knowing when to bend. You know, sometimes it's just about a comfort or someone wanting to be heard mm-hmm. Throughout the decision-making process. So knowing when to bend. If they say something that's kind of like ridiculous or like off the wall in the decision-making process, you have to think about it. It's like, well, I know what, you know, she meant, but it's not really going to impact or like skew the decision one way or the other. So let her have that moment, and mm-hmm. she can own that, and knowing when to bend and not to say something back or be like, oh no, are you crazy? What are you thinking? Like, you know, I'm like, okay, oh, that was a great idea, baby. Like, I'm gonna make sure I hold that in my process queue, and we'll keep moving forward. So knowing when to bend, mm-hmm. Knowing that everything is not personal, mm-hmm. you know, and making sure that the other person knows that, like, I'm not attacking you. I'm not attacking your thought. This is just, you know, working towards what's best for us right now. Right. So knowing when to bend, knowing when to make that decision to jump in and do the whole, are you crazy, but saying it in a better way than saying, are you crazy? Wow, that was a great idea. Like, I will definitely keep that in my process queue. Like, that's my go-to right there. I will definitely hold that in the process queue, and we will definitely come back to that. But I don't put a time limit on it because it might not be in this conversation. Definitely we will come back to that, I promise you. But yeah, that's definitely funny. Knowing when to bend and understanding that everything is not personal when you're making a decision, I think is very important. So. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add? Go ahead, baby.
No, I mean, I was going to, but I actually think you said it perfectly. So I think I'll just move on to our fourth, which that tip is really just to lean into the decision that's made together. And that really goes into support. So regardless of how you guys got to the decision, regardless of what type of decision it was. The fact is, especially if you're a couple, you are a united front. And so it doesn't matter who made the decision. It doesn't matter if it turns out to be the wrong decision. It doesn't matter if it turns out to be a bad decision. You stand by each other and you lean into that decision. And if it turns out that you have to change something about the decision or go back and make a different decision, you're doing it together. So that way there's no blame game. I think it could be very easy to be like, well, we're in this situation now because of a decision that you made, talking about your partner, and that is not helpful. It's much more helpful when you approach the decision together. Again, even if you don't agree with it, you are in a partnership with your partner and you are agreeing with your partner. And so with that, that's my final tip, is just support each other in that decision. If you have to go back and reevaluate that, then you can do that more effectively together when you're not judging the other person and saying, you did this to our family, or you made this decision and it was the wrong one. That's not the right approach.
Right. The only thing that I would add before we finish up is that was not, like, that didn't come with us and with our relationship. That's something that we had to work on.
Yeah.
We had to talk about it and we had to get a better understanding. So we're not saying, hey, do all of these and they're going to, like, just work out for you and make, you know, decision making easy. Like, you have to work towards these when you're talking about being in a relationship with your partner. So that was something that I just definitely wanted to add, that we definitely had to work towards that and supporting each other, because at first we didn't really know how to support each other and how, you know, you supported me and how I supported you. So once we kind of figured that out and identified that, then we kind of took a step forward and it was like, all right, we understand how we support each other. So how can we best use our strengths to uplift each other and support each other even more? And now it's just natural in our decision-making process that, like, I can just look at her or kind of hear a tone in her voice and I'm like, okay, cool, she needs this from me right now.
Yep.
And vice versa, and I know that she does that for me sometimes. Mm-hmm. She's like, all right, like, hey, DJ, just calm down just a little bit. Just breathe. Like, it's going to be all good. It's going to work out. Or, hey, D, like, come on, we got to figure this out. Like, hurry up. You know, and we know what we need, and that push-pull effect between the two of us and how we support each other. So,
yep.
Decision making together.
Yes. How we do it. You guys heard it. We gave you two big examples, but there is definitely a lot more that we do. But I hope that the takeaways were good. And you also, again, found out just more about our lives.
Right.
We're just putting it all out there. Yeah. We are excited that you guys are listening to us. This, again, obviously, this is like episode, what, 5, I think?
Yep, 5 it is.
Yeah, it's episode 5, and so we're excited you're listening, and we hope that if you guys love the episode and you want to keep listening to us, apparently iTunes is like everything that's good and holy in the podcast world, and so if you want us to keep making episodes, please go on iTunes and rate and leave a review for us. So that we can continue to do this.
That's right. And we appreciate the support and love that we've received so far.
Oh, yeah.
And we're very excited about this. We're not going anywhere because I feel like for us,
this is fun.
Yeah, fun.
We love it.
Yeah.
It's fun. So, yeah.
All right. Until the next time.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. If you like today's episode, please subscribe to the Success in Black and White podcast. You'll get notified every time a new episode is posted, which is every Tuesday.
If you loved this episode, help us spread the love. Rate and leave a review on our iTunes podcast episode. Also, share that you listen on social media and tag us on your posts. My social media handle is I am Daryl Lovett on all social media platforms.
And mine is April Dawn Lovett on all social media platforms as well. Thanks for listening. Oh my gosh, you sound like Keith Sweat.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, did it record?
Yeah.